98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. We are live from the Oxygen Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what's going on?
This is
such a different day than any. It was weird. It was so crazy.
This morning was weird, wasn't it? Ready for the show.
We have basically gone 2 months of Sun Central. We've mixed in what we could with the D-backs and the Coyotes and the Diamondbacks and other teams and stuff, but it's so ultra-focused on Suns.
Yes.
The preview for the games coming up, the other teams, to get up today and not have that, I mean, that's what we've done for all these years. So it was very, very strange to get up today and prepare a little bit differently than we usually
Since
do.
Since about the middle of May, I would ballpark it that other than our weekly features with the Diamondbacks, our chat with the manager, our clubhouse call-in in the booth where we talk with, you know, one of the Diamondbacks broadcasters. Other than those, I would say since about the middle of May, 98% of the content of our show has been Phoenix Suns basketball. And whether the game we were looking back on, the game we were looking ahead to, the series we were looking back on, the series we were looking ahead to, maybe 98's a lot. 95% of our content has been on the Phoenix Suns. So to get up this morning and to start searching for stories to talk about, and you didn't have that kind of as your center of gravity, it was weird. It took me a while to
Oklahoma.
I got to remember how to do this again, right? There are other things going on in the world besides who the Suns are playing that night. It was really strange.
Yeah, and then I broke this Coyote story this morning about this trade that they made with the Flyers. So I was heavily involved in that. And then the NFL came out with that news, which we're going to get to in a second. So it was kind of back to normal in many ways.
Yeah,
back to normal.
It was. And let's not waste any time. Let's get right to that story here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in, brought to you by Revitalize Weight Loss.
Mike Garofolo on the NFL Network on the new rules put forth by the NFL about the forfeiture of games if a team doesn't have enough players to play in them.
The long and short of this is that the NFL in this memo is stating that they are intending to play the entire regular season over 18 weeks. And there will not be a 19th week. So if you get outside of that week and, hey, we couldn't make it work and we couldn't reschedule it, that game is forfeited. The team that had the issue, they lost. The other team, they win. It counts towards the playoffs, all that stuff. That is the long and short of this memo. But there still could be games that are kind of slid around. They will take into consideration many things as far as whether it's safe to allow that game to be played. Stadium availability will factor into that as well, as will competitive advantage, disadvantage, because you could have a team, let's say you push that game back to a Monday or a Tuesday, and then the other team's got a short turnaround or whatnot. So these are all be factors.
Dan Graziano of ESPN tweeted out, "This year the NFL says if your game is canceled due to an outbreak among unvaccinated players, you could end up having to forfeit. Once again, the clear message from the NFL to its players is get vaccinated." That was the tweet from Dan Graziano. This was the tweet from DeAndre Hopkins, which has since been deleted.
He deleted it?
Oh, he deleted it. Oh, you didn't know that? Oh, yeah, that's why you were in the last
15... not know he deleted it.
All I know
is that there is no such thing as a deleted tweet.
Well, not when you screenshot it.
There's no such thing.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to find DeAndre Hopkins' tweet? You could find it. It was deleted. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. He wrote, "Never thought I would say this, but being put in a position to hurt my team because I don't want to partake in the vaccine is making me question my future in the NFL." There were other tweets that have not been deleted, at least not as of 10 minutes ago. One of them, just one word with a question mark. Freedom? Question mark. He's had a back and forth with Jalen Ramsey. He's had a back and forth with Gary Sheffield Jr., formerly of Major League Baseball, right? He's been talking to other professional athletes about this. Pro Football Talk pointed out, it costs Hopkins nothing to question this. If ultimately he retires, he would owe the Cardinals $22 million in unearned signing bonus money.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he deleted the tweet.
This is all fascinating. He's not retiring because of this, okay? I mean, that's absurd to think that he's going to walk away and do this. The NFL's policy is fascinating, right? Because you don't have time to make these games up. Like, you know, like, so you forfeit the game. If you can't field a team, you forfeit the game. That's fascinating. Like, that is fascinating. We haven't seen that really, right? In sports, we haven't seen, okay, you forfeit the game because you've got guys that aren't ready. I mean, in football, in college football, when ASU couldn't field a team for 3 weeks, they just didn't play those games.
Right.
It wasn't like, ASU, you lose. And you win, you lose. Because, was they play Colorado? Like, you get the win, ASU gets the loss.
Sure.
We didn't see
the
that.
The NFL last year, we saw them going to the nth degree to move games around.
How about the Marlins in baseball? How many games did the Marlins miss?
I was talking with Jarrett Carlin about this. He pointed out that last year the NFL played a game on every day of the week. Every day of the week there was an NFL game. First time ever, right? So
even the other day, the Yankees weren't able to play a game because of COVID. Wasn't a forfeit.
Yeah, wasn't a forfeit. The difference is the availability widespread of the vaccination. And the ability of the players to go get, that was not an option last fall when the NFL was bending over backwards to reschedule. That was not an option for college football last year when it was, you know, trying to figure out to get these games in. Now that it's available widespread, the NFL is in a position where I'm sure they want to protect their investment. And their investment is the accessible readability of the product. Right. The every Sunday there's a game. Every Monday night there's a game.
And don't jeopardize it.
And don't jeopardize it. And look, if you're going to do something to mess with the product, it's going to be on you. It's going to be on the unvaccinated player. It's going to be on the organization. And you're not going to get paid that week. And that's the other part of this. Here's Mike Garofalo again on the NFL Network.
If the game's not played, it's not just the team that caused the outbreak. Both teams would not be paid their Paragraph 5 salary, their base salary, that installment for that game. So even if it's the team, I mean, you remember teams were upset last year. Hey, it's their problem, and we're rescheduling this game, and we're moving this game around, and it's inconveniencing us. Yeah, well, on top of that, you're not going to get paid if it's the other team that creates the mess.
And just real quick, this tweet from
who doesn't get paid? The whole team?
The players don't get paid.
All of the. So if I'm healthy, if I'm okay to play, but other players aren't, I lose my salary?
Yeah.
If your team is healthy, but the other team can't play and the game gets canceled, you don't get paid. That's what he's saying. Both teams will not get paid for a canceled
Neither
game.
Neither team will get paid.
Regardless of whose fault it is.
Oh, my God.
I'll play it again.
If the game's not played, it's not just the team that caused the outbreak. Both teams would not be paid their Paragraph 5 salary, their base salary, that installment for that game. So even if it's the team, I mean, you remember teams were upset last year. Hey, it's their problem, and we're rescheduling this game, and we're moving this game around, and it's inconveniencing us. Yeah, well, on top of that, you're not going to get paid if it's the other team that creates the mess.
Wow.
All right. Wow. So problem with this or no? I mean, let's delve into it a little bit. All right. So I was vaccinated. You were vaccinated. Okay.
Yeah.
I got the vaccine. I got the two shots. I know plenty of people. I got people in my family that won't get it. I have people in my family that do get it. Okay. If you don't want to get the vaccine, if you don't want to get the shot, that's your right. That's your prerogative. It's your body.
Of course.
I'm not going to tell somebody you have to get it. You don't have to get it. I got it. Okay. So I don't want to hear from people, oh, you're an anti-vaccine. No, I got the vaccine. After talking with my daughter, who's a doctor, and my family and everything, I got the vaccine. I volunteered at State Farm Stadium. I volunteered my 8 hours. I got vaccine shot number one, vaccine shot number two. I got it. I don't believe that I have the right to tell people that you need to get it. You should get it. And so my opinion was I should get it. I have family members that their opinion is they shouldn't get it. That's fine. For me, that's fine. If DeAndre Hopkins doesn't want to get the vaccine, if he's got a reason why he doesn't want to get it, to me, that's fine. What we're seeing, though, is the repercussions of those people that don't want to get it because other people are going to, in some ways, punish them for it.
Well, I mean, no one's telling him he can't play. No one's telling him that he has to get a vaccination or retire. No one's saying that he's, look, this is kind of the, everybody's got an individual choice to make and make it. I mean, do what you want to do. I'm not going to tell anybody what to do. I'm not going to tell. It's not
no, but once certain countries like you can't come to this country unless you're vaccinated. Well, now you're Now you're putting it on these people to make a decision that they may not want to make. I don't want to get the vaccine, but in order for me to go here, I have to. Maybe a stadium says you can't come into the stadium unless you're vaccinated.
But then you have to make that choice. And right. if those are the rules and you have to decide, like let's say it's a country. OK, you can't come here unless you're vaccinated. Now I have to choose whether I want to go there or not.
What about an arena? You can't go to a game unless you're vaccinated.
It all becomes then we all have a choice to make. You know, DeAndre Hopkins has a choice to make. And if he really wants to make it, if he really wants to not play under those circumstances, that's a decision that he can make. I mean, obviously, this means very, very much to us here in Arizona because DeAndre Hopkins
is a Cardinal
and one of their best players, one of the best players in the NFL. I suspect this will all get resolved one way or another. It is a very bold stance by the NFL. It's one clearly designed to motivate its players to get vaccinated so that they can, because the NFL is protecting its investment, its product.
They even say the team responsible for the canceled game will be subject to discipline by the NFL. So you are being punished if your players aren't vaccinated.
If you have enough players who aren't unvaccinated that you forces you to cancel a game, yeah. And the
so
NFL,
you're going to get punished for it.
The NFL is trying to protect its business model, right? And that's their prerogative. Again, everybody's got a choice to make. The NFL made theirs. Now it's up to guys like DeAndre Hopkins and others to make their choice. And we just kind of see where it goes from there. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the Suns season, it's been over for a few days now. What is next and what decisions need to be made in the coming weeks and month is what we'll talk about next on the Burns and Gambo show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. And even though the NBA Finals are done, that does not mean that we are done talking about the Phoenix Suns. And it's funny, we were talking in the last segment about kind of show prep this morning on our own. Gambo's at his house prepping, I'm at my house prepping. My eyes just like gravity, man, just kept going to Suns stories, looking for, you know, what are they saying about this guy? What are they saying about that guy? Is that guy going to be back? Is this guy going to be back? How much money is Ayton going to get? How much money is Paul going to get? Is Paul going to go to the LA Lakers, which we're going to talk about later?
Mikal Bridges
is another guy. So let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about the future of the Phoenix Suns now that the season.
The bright future of the Phoenix Suns. The future's bright.
What should be bright?
I mean, I'm
sure.
Convinced that. And we'll talk about this later, too, with the tough weather. The West is tough enough, you know, and everything. But the future is extremely bright. The Phoenix Suns won 14 playoff games. Like, today, I feel better today. I feel rejuvenated. I feel better today than I did yesterday. I was down yesterday. I was down. I was a little depressed. I was a little upset. It was tough. I mean, I don't know if you felt the same way. Today, I can appreciate the Suns and what they did, and I knew I was going to, but I needed a day to mourn. I needed one day to mourn the loss of the NBA Finals for the Phoenix Suns. I had my mourning, and now I'm thinking, man, they won 14 freaking playoff games. They won four. DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, Devin Booker, 14 playoff games those guys won. They got experience, man. How many overall did they played 22 playoff games, I think. 22 playoff games. The Phoenix Suns got an opportunity to participate in. Invaluable experience for those players. Invaluable experience. It's going to pay a lot of dividends down the road.
Appreciate your enthusiasm.
I'm enthused.
I am not there yet.
You need another day to mourn?
I'm not. They were up 2-0 in the NBA Finals. I'm just not there yet.
I feel
yet.
Better today.
I'm not there yet.
I feel better.
Let's talk about the future, though. And we're going to save the Chris Paul conversation for 3 o'clock. So we're going to talk about everybody basically but Chris Paul here. Let's talk about DeAndre Ayton. Yesterday, Bobby Marks was on with us, and we asked him, did Ayton's finals performance change his contract outlook? Because he wasn't that great in the finals.
I think he changes a little bit. I want to look at the big picture. You know, certainly he was really good in that you know, the Denver series. I thought he was good in, you know, for most of the playoffs here. I think the hard part with centers is it's probably the least appreciated position from a spending standpoint, right? Unless you're Jokic, Embiid, Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, even Rudy Gobert, that contract's being questioned, right? As far as, even though he's coming off Defensive Player of the Year, and there's such a drop from those guys to, like, you know, Yosef Nurkic and Brook Lopez, as far as from a salary standpoint, this is not a position where you've got, you know, 15 point guards earning $20 million plus, right? Where it's a position of need. So yeah, I mean, it's like if he became a free agent next, if you didn't do anything with him, do you think he can get a max offer next offseason from a team? I don't. I don't think he can.
That's a great question. If DeAndre Ayton gets the unrestricted free agency a year from now, 2 years from now, whatever, would he get a max offer in the open market?
Yes.
You think so?
Yes.
A full max.
I don't. He's 22 years old.
I know. It's just the position he plays is, to Bobby's point, is not one that, unless you're talking about the very, very top, and maybe DeAndre Ayton belongs in that conversation, that you typically pay max money for, because centers are tough, right? I mean, DeAndre Ayton works so well because of his versatility. I'm kind of with Bobby on this one. I don't know if on the free and open market DeAndre Ayton would get an absolute maxed out contract or not. I don't know for sure.
He'd be a 23-year-old center who is one of the three best centers in the NBA. One of the three best centers in the league.
You've already got him ahead of Gobert?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that Embiid is ahead of him.
Well,
and
here's the thing.
And Jokic, and that's it. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, whether he gets there or not, the idea would be that the Suns keep him from getting there. And if they max him, they max him. He's probably earned that, even though he faded a little bit towards the end. And I wouldn't have a problem at all with the Suns giving him a max contract. The way Bobby writes about it, he wonders if the Suns can get away with giving him a little bit less than a max.
You might be able to.
Because if the number he throws out is $112 million. Is DeAndre Ayton at 23 years old really going to say no to $112 million?
Maybe.
And bet on himself that he'll be able to get more a year from now, 2 years from now? He might.
You're not going to want to wait. That's the.
But $112 million is an awful lot to say no to, you know, if you're DeAndre. What do you like to say about saying no to that first big contract?
Never turn down your first big contract.
Yep. And that's what he writes. What happens if the Suns offer a four-year, $112 million contract, but with a player option in year four? Would he bet on himself, play out the season, or is walking away from $112 million money in guaranteed money too great of a risk? Whether the Suns want to take that chance or not, I don't know. And I'm not trying to make this sound like I don't want DeAndre Ayton back. I do.
You're concerned with how much I got to pay him.
It's just the position. You know, it's just a position where we're seeing more and more teams are getting away from the center spot. And I just wonder how much the Suns would be bidding against themselves if they maxed
out. I think there's room to negotiate. When you're talking about a 4 or 5 year deal between 20 and 30 million with room to negotiate, 20 on the low end, 30 on the high end, you try to sign him for a little bit less. I think going into the playoffs, nobody thought he was a max player. He hadn't earned it. Some people may think that he earned it right now. You pay guys based on other stuff, too. And this is the truth. You pay guys based on their character, their leadership, their drive, their work ethic. Can you build a team around him? You don't pay guys that the answer to those questions are no. Do you like his character? Do you like his leadership? Do you like his drive? Do you like his work ethic? Can you build around him? If you answer yes to those questions, then you should not be afraid to pay the guy the money. If you answer no to those questions, no, I don't like his character. I don't like his drive. I don't like his work ethic. Then you don't pay that guy. But here's what could happen. The best thing that could happen to the Suns is that he signs an offer sheet with another team after next year, because they can match it. They can match it. So the Suns can give more years and more money. So matching actually saves you money, because you wouldn't be spending that extra year. You wouldn't be spending the extra money. He has no leverage if he signs an offer sheet. The only leverage he has is to wait 2 years for unrestricted free agency. But I'm telling you, nobody does that. Nobody waits 2 years. No. Hey, I got $125 million for you. You want it? No, I'm going to wait 2 years. That doesn't happen.
And maybe the Suns can get away with offering him that, and he would take it so he doesn't go anywhere.
I know we want to talk about everybody else. Tatum, Mitchell, Fox, all signed after year three. All of them. Tatum, Mitchell, and Fox all signed after year three for five-year deals for around $195 million. But they only get that money if they're NBA first, second, or third team. So it's kind of like a popularity contest on you'll get paid if the guys vote you first, second, or third team.
All right. We ran out of time. We will talk about Mikal Bridges and others in a bit. Football season is here. We're getting you ready with the Valley Virtual Series Training Camp Edition. Text the word camp to 620-620. Get a link to this exclusive event where you'll hear from your favorite Arizona sports hosts, and you'll have a chance to win prizes like tickets or autographed memorabilia. Text the word camp to 620-620. Arizona Sports Valley Virtual Series presented by 72 Sold. Get your price. It is the tremor that could send shockwaves throughout the entire college football world. Texas and Oklahoma leaving the Big 12, headed to the SEC. We'll talk about that possibility next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter Poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Luke Lipinski filling in for Sarah today.
Woo!
Hi, Luke.
It's my big moment right here. I don't want to mess this question up.
Big moment. You filled in on this show like 50 dozen times over the last 3 years.
Yeah, but this is huge.
Oh, this is big. Reading off the Twitter poll question of the day is the pinnacle of Luke Lipinski's broadcast career.
Well, we'll see how it goes.
Not buying that for a second. So while you're in there, what do you have for us? What is our poll question today?
It is a yes or no question. We're starting me off simple. Do you think Cam Payne will be on the Suns roster next season?
Oh, man, I don't know. That's why we picked this one. This is a good one. Because I don't know is not an option. Yes or no? I've got a funny feeling the answer is no.
Like, you think that's what people are voting, or that's what the answer is?
No, like, my gut is telling me he will not be on this roster next year. Okay. I have a funny feeling the answer is no to that
question.
I'll
go yes.
All right. So you guys are split. The yes vote actually is in the lead right now. 63%. No has 37%.
It's okay. So not quite 60-40. Yeah. You know, not quite 50-50-ish. But yeah, I think all the other ones are kind of no-brainers, right? You want Bridges back. You want Ayton back. Everybody wants Chris Paul back. You're going to be able to afford to bring Cameron Payne back? How much money is he going to get offered? How much? That's a good question. You can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page, at Burns and Gambo. One word is where that's at. And, of course, you can interact with the show with Luke as he is monitoring all things at Burns and Gambo. Well, we didn't get a chance to talk about this yesterday. According to a report that originated from a Texas A&M beat writer for the Houston Chronicle, consider that for a moment, Texas and Oklahoma have reached out to the SEC about leaving the Big 12 and joining the Southeastern Conference. It has prompted an emergency Big 12 meeting today to discuss this. The athletic director of Texas A&M, they already left, right, for the SEC nearly 10 years ago. I think it was 9. He's like, yeah, no, we're the Texas team that's in the SEC. You don't get to come. But it's not up to Texas A&M. Ultimately, it could come down to a vote of the 14 SEC members. And if 11 of them say yes, Texas and Oklahoma could get in.
Yeah.
A&M would be a no vote. I've read Missouri would be a no vote. Is there one other no vote in there to keep this thing from happening?
So Missouri would say no, too. Huh?
I read that this morning in, Stuart Mandel's column. Yeah.
So they just need to, those two need to gang up on somebody to say no.
Yep. Sway just somebody to get them to say no.
Because three no votes and they can't do it, right?
Three no votes and they can't do it. It takes, or is it four no votes?
Might be four no votes.
It might be four no votes. They need two more. But it might not even get to that point. And here's probably why this story was leaked. And here's probably why, I'm just speculating here, this story might have been leaked by somebody from Texas A&M. This is Chip Brown, Texas reporter for 24/7 Sports. He was on CBS Radio this morning.
The last time we saw significant realignment back in 2010 and 2011, you know, you had Baylor threatening legal action against schools that were considering leaving. And so I think you could see that again. I mean, the state legislature in Texas is full of Texas Tech and Baylor lawmakers who have influence, and they'll work actively to try to change minds here. And this thing could go in 100 different directions between now and 2025, when the Big 12 media rights agreement is up.
Stuart Mandel, in his piece this morning, Gambo, quote, "The best way to blow up potential realignment is to let word get out before the contracts have been signed." Close quote.
Texas A&M.
I don't know. I'm just speculating.
Hey, do you guys remember a few months ago when European soccer was trying to create a super league?
Right.
And it leaked out, and there was so much outrage that
they had
24 hours later, they just abandoned the idea completely.
And I got to imagine,
this isn't going to be abandoned. They're going to look at this. Look, this all comes down to money. Okay. This is a money decision. The Big 12 doesn't make the same type of money as the SEC. And you're Texas and you're Oklahoma, and you say, we're brand, we're big, we're powerful, but we're getting so much less. The Big 12 is, they're the third most annually among major conferences, $38 million a year they get. But the SEC paid out 44.6, and that number is expected to go up quite a bit when their deal with CBS ends in just 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go from 44.6 up. So right now, I mean, you're talking about right now $6.6 million more. That's going to jump to $10 million more, or maybe even more than that. It comes down to money. That's a lot of money. $10, $15 million more, and that's what it might be, between $10 and $15 million more. The SEC is going to continue to get paid. The Big 12 just doesn't have that ability to pay everybody the way the SEC does. So that is where this becomes a story. The Big 12 just doesn't pay the same amount of the SEC. And Texas and Oklahoma says, you know what? We're big name brands. We want a piece of that money.
I think Stuart Mandel is one of the smartest people in the business when it comes to college athletics. And he wrote a terrific kind of Q&A piece about this. Why Texas? It's obvious. Texas is a huge brand. Why Oklahoma? And he said, Oklahoma's a big brand too, but they've been kind of getting whipped by the SEC for years now. Why would they want to go into the SEC?
Get your brains beat in?
And he basically said, because without Texas in the Big 12, what is Oklahoma, right? They have no chief rival. They have no other kind of crown jewel program within the conference.
Unless the Big 12 and the Pac-12 decided to do something.
Unless they did.
Unless you were able to, you know, if you're the Big 12 or maybe if you're the Pac-12, you could say, okay, come join the Pac-12. Here's the crazy thing about this is the landscape of this country and where these teams are. How the hell is Texas going to play in the SEC?
Well, Texas already does play in the SEC. It's Texas A&M.
I know, but
you know what I mean? I mean, there's already a Texas school in the SEC.
That's true. But that's you're Texas? Like, that's a lot of travel.
Of course.
All of those schools, Florida and Alabama and Auburn, I mean, they're all southeast.
Texas is traveling further than that already. They have West Virginia in the Big 12.
That's right. They have West Virginia in the Big 12. They're already going even further
than
that.
For one game?
Yeah, but I'm just saying.
Every 2 years?
And that's only football. Think about what it does for these other sports.
They have to
travel there a couple
times, volleyball,
basketball.
Right?
You have to have somewhat of a travel partner to help accommodate that.
Now, our first thought when this came down yesterday, and obviously we were hyper-focused on Suns losing the finals, but our first thought when this came down yesterday was, okay, let's say it does happen. Let's say Texas and Oklahoma leaves. Although I do kind of am intrigued by your idea of Oklahoma saying, we don't want to go to the SEC. If we're going to go anywhere, we'd rather go to the Pac-12. Where we can, you know, we can bring our brand to a conference that we feel like we could win every single year, as opposed to the SEC, where we're going to get our brains beat in football every single year.
And that would generate more money for the Pac-12 with their television
negotiations. Of course, of course. But let's say for a second it happens. Texas and Oklahoma goes to the SEC. Well, now if you're the Pac-12, do you cherry pick off of what's left from the Big 12?
Sure.
Say maybe, and I'm just looking
Oklahoma
at
Oklahoma State.
I would think the four you could potentially want would be Oklahoma State, TCU, Texas Tech, and Baylor. The three Texas schools and Oklahoma
State.
That's
the recruiting, one of the recruiting hotbeds in the world for talent. Of course you'd want to get in there.
Here's who you probably wouldn't want. Iowa State, West Virginia, K-State, Kansas. Those are probably the schools you wouldn't, I would think.
I agree with you on the Texas schools. I agree with you. And that would be the end of the Big 12. So Texas and Oklahoma go to the SEC. And the Pac-12 takes the rest of the Texas schools, and now these other Big 12 schools are going to look to just, you know, they're going to have to go somewhere else.
Do they get folded into the Big 10? Does the Big 10 even want them?
They might want the Iowa schools.
I mean, well, Iowa's already there, but Iowa State, then they could get a nice Iowa State. I mean, they play each other,
maybe,
I think, every year. But
Kansas schools, I don't know. But, yeah, I think the Big 10 would probably look to add.
Or does the Pac-12 take the two best of the Big 12 schools that are left and then go add, like, a BYU or a Boise State? Say, okay, we'll expand by four. We're going to bring in BYU, Boise State, and the very two best
teams that are
left. If
they wanted to bring in BYU
left.
And Boise State, they would have done it already.
Well, you would think so.
They haven't done it. They've resisted that temptation. But the Texas schools and that, you know, that recruiting hotbed, I think a lot of coaches would be like, that, you know, that could help us in recruiting in Texas.
You can text us your thoughts on Texas, Oklahoma, the Pac-12, what they should, could do about it if this indeed comes to pass. You can text us on the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. And if it's a good one, we might even read it on the air. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, between trades, the draft, arena news, it's been a busy day for the Coyotes. We'll get you caught up next on the Burns and Gambo show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Just real quick, before we get to the Coyotes, I'm going to spend 30 seconds on this.
Yeah.
Because we were just talking about that Oklahoma-Texas stuff to the SEC. Pete Thamel on Twitter a minute ago, quote, "It has become an expectation around college sports that OU and Texas would go to the SEC." One high-ranking college official, quote, "I think it's going to happen, and it's the beginning of a lot of dominoes."
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It has to be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the dominoes part for sure.
The Big 12, was it about 6-7 years ago, the Big 12 survived when it looked like the Pac-12 was going to raid them?
I think it was like 9 years ago.
That long
yeah,
ago?
I think it was
they
that
survived,
long ago.
And now they got to deal with it again.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So I just wanted to pass that along because we were just talking about that in the last segment, the rumors about Oklahoma and Texas kind of trying to join the SEC. A lot of stuff out there to talk about the Coyotes today, including a trade today that gets them some assets, including a player and some future draft picks as well. The Coyotes in a deal today, a news that you broke, acquire Shane Gostisbehere today from Philadelphia, correct?
Yeah, and it is 28 years old. He had a really good rookie season. He was second in the Rookie of the Year voting back in 2015-16. He's kind of been up and down, you know, since then. He's not a very good defensive player. But he did have knee surgery. He had 9 goals in 41 games this past year, and he's got the ability to really help them as an offensive defenseman. He could be that offensive defenseman and help them on the power play. So that's what you're looking at. Now, Flyers got rid of him just because they needed cap space. They tried to trade him and get something for him. The Coyotes got him, and they're basically they didn't give up anything to get him, but they also added a second round pick. And a seventh round pick. John Shaika ruined this organization, really ruined it. And the Coyotes needed to get some more assets. So they've been very active in getting themselves a bunch of draft picks so that way they could try to replenish the system a little bit. Now, with that being said, I just want to make this clear.
Yeah.
Second round picks, and they've got a bunch of them now. I think he's got 4 of them. It is difficult for, you know, for a second-round pick to make the NHL. They make it at about a 20% rate, maybe even a little bit less. So it's not a sure thing that a second-round pick is even going to make the NHL, but the Coyotes need those shots. They need those opportunities to draft some young kids and get them in the system.
They now have 7 second-round picks over the next 2 years. 3 this weekend in the draft, which begins tomorrow. 4 next year. Maybe, as we were talking about during the break, they could package some of those together to try to get up into the first round. They do have a surplus of those now kind of moving forward, but because they're not in the first round, if that gives them the opportunity to package those and move around. But I understand what you're saying, that a lot of times those don't turn out. So, again, that's the news with the Coyotes in terms of player acquisition. Last night in the expansion draft, they lost forward Tyler Pitlick to Seattle with the expectation that they're just going to flip him to Calgary if it hasn't already happened. So that expansion draft happened last night. And in the midst of all of this, surprise, 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 headline from azcentral.com, the Arizona Coyotes in talks with Tempe on a new arena. We looked at where it would be, very narrow strip of land.
48 acres.
Not a lot.
48 acres. It would be an entertainment destination is how it's going to be looked at.
It would be near Priest Drive and Rio Salado, just south of the dry riverbed. Currently, it's basically where the public works and the compost yard is for the city of Tempe.
It's contaminated land.
So you'd have to spend tens of millions of dollars.
70 to 80,
I think. To kind of clean up the land just to be able to build something on top of it. But apparently the two sides are talking about putting a building there.
Look, Alex Morello is committed to keeping the Coyotes here. He bought a home here. His family's buying homes here. So I think that he's very committed to staying in Arizona. Look, this is going to be completely privately financed, okay? A $2 billion project, privately financed. The arena portion would probably be about $700 to $750 million. If things go right, they could have a shovel in the ground this point next year. But you do need some, you know, you do need the city on board. The city would be basically, the city would have a credit card, you know, for a couple $100 million, but they wouldn't actually have to pay it back. They'd have to issue some bonds through a special district, but it would be the Coyotes that would be on the hook for paying all of that back. That's my understanding of it. But, if, you know, the city wouldn't be on the hook for any money, but they would, obviously, the Coyotes would be buying the land. The Coyotes would be financing this whole thing. And it would be an entertainment destination is how that they would put it together. I imagine it would be hotels and office space and restaurants, and it's not just an arena.
Probably a casino, too, I would imagine, or at least a sports book, given the way things have gone in that regard. That you mentioned the $70 million figure. That is brought up in the story. The cleanup of the land would cost about $70 million.
Yes.
According to a consultant, development on the land could generate approximately 3 to 4 times that over 30 years, so upwards of $250 million in revenue for the city if they were willing to make that initial investment of giving them the land and cleaning it up like that for $70 million. And if the whole thing is privately financed,
is what I heard,
then you don't have to worry about asking for taxpayer money to build it.
You have to get the bonds from the city for a certain portion of it.
Sure.
And then, those bonds, my understanding is the city wouldn't be on the hook for the bonds. They would issue the bonds, but then it would be... It's almost like you issue a bond for a school district, but the school district pays it back, not the city. So that's kind of how it would work.
It's strange. It's oddly encouraging to you read through the story. And granted, I am not a financial reporter. I am not intricately familiar with, city politics and how dollar signs work and things like that. I just know this from all the years that I've done this. When it comes to the Coyotes in a new arena, until there is a shovel in the ground, until there is a date, a firm...
You'll refrain from getting excited?
It's agreed to. It's done. Everything's been signed. This is when the shovel goes in the ground. Until we get to that day, Gambo, I'm just going to be skeptical about this because I feel like we've been down this road many, many times before.
Let's bring in our one of our main Coyote guys, Luke Lipinski. And just first off, just your thoughts on the trade with Philadelphia.
I think Bill Armstrong's ability to recoup a bunch of draft picks when they really didn't have any, like you said. I mean, the previous regime kind of burned out all their early picks. Now they have 7 second-rounders this weekend and next year. And I agree with you. I mean, your second-round picks, they're not necessarily going to do anything, but maybe you package them. Either way, just having 7 of them is better than having what they had before. I still think Gostisbehere could be decent. He was really good early in his career offensively. Defensively, certainly has issues. The Flyers benched him a few times last year, but when they bring him back in, he'd score every game. So, I mean, for a team that needs offense, I don't think that's a huge issue.
Yeah. What about the arena?
I'm going to take the same wait-and-see approach. But if you want to give me the shovel, I will. If you want to put the arena in Tempe, I will 100%, I will break the ground for you.
It's a good spot for
it. So much closer. Yeah.
That'd be a really good spot for it.
Yeah.
Near the downtown Tempe kind of corridor area with all those buildings there, all those developments there, people living there. The university is close. You've got all the stuff on Mill. Be a really good spot. It's centrally located. A lot of people can very easily get to it. Be a good spot for it. It's hard to get excited about it when we've been down this road so many times.
I'm more excited about this one just because it does seem like it is going to be privately financed and you're not going to rely on taxpayer money for it. That might help it get it over the hump, maybe?
This one does, at least so far in the early stages, seem a little bit different than the other ones we've heard. And this is a different ownership group. I mean, you can't blame these guys for what has happened in the past. But I'm with you, Bernsie. It's been 10 years to a certain extent, of 10 years of 2 weeks, so... I'm excited, but I want to see it start to happen.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, thank you, Luke. We appreciate you chiming in. All eyes are going to be on the status of Chris Paul's contract coming up in the next couple of weeks. Who are the other free agent point guards this offseason? How could they impact Chris Paul's future? We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.